Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. How are you? It's 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, of course. This is another Anything Goes. And I will tell you, I've had a wonderful, wonderful day today. It's been wonderful. But the amazing thing, and I have to tell two of my guests tonight this, because my cousin has a Kindle and she's reading books, and reading is important to me. It always has been. And she says to me, she says, "Cousin Bennett, I'm reading." And I said, "Well, what are you reading?" And she says, "Well, it's a romance book. It's a paranormal romance." I said, "That's great." She says, "It's called Fashionably Dead." I said, "Yeah, I know the author." He says, "You do?" I said, "Yeah, she's going to do my show tonight." She says, "She is?" I said, "Yeah." And then she says the next book she's reading is one from Allura's Cave, which is Dawn Montgomery's book. It's like, well, Dawn's doing my show too.
That is, it's awesome.
Like, I feel so, you know, it's like I'm gone from a cousin to a great cousin. So I just think, you know, it's like, yeah, it doesn't take much to make a kid's day, and you know, now I'm suddenly Mr. Popular in the family, for at least her. But let me introduce my guests, starting with the woman who worked herself to the bone today on her blog party, and welcome to my party, Robin Peterman.
Thank you, Bennett. It's nice to be here.
And if you haven't read Fashionably Dead, you should. Fashionably Dead Down Under and the new one, Cop Feel, which hopefully I'll get a copy soon. She knows that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And the next, and I'm not forgetting you, Sherry, but I'll get you last because I want to make sure my cousin hears this. Dawn Montgomery, say hello and give them a quick 30 seconds.
Hello, everybody. How are you? I hope you're having a good night tonight. Thanks for having me here, Bennett. I really enjoy your show, so I'm pretty excited to be here.
Thank you. And to replace the missing parties, and my friend, and she is my friend because we have had discussions for years, Sherry Hayes. Hiya, Sherry.
Hello.
Tell them also about, I want to make sure before, if I lose you, about your new book, Crossing the Line. See, I keep up with you.
Yeah, I know. I just published too many books, didn't I? I have a new book coming out on September 4th called Crossing the Line. It's the third book in my Daniels Brothers series, and it's about a homicide detective who's a widower, and a young woman who kind of shakes things up a bit in his life. So it's a contemporary romance with a little mystery thrown in there. So,
see, I know everything, don't I? I'm good with this.
Dude, you keep up with that stuff.
I keep up
though,
with all
I'm
of
sure.
You, you know, it's like, yeah. But let me ask you, you guys don't, I hope you guys don't mind, because we have a number of questions from the list, the public here. We have gotten emails galore, and it's like,
awesome.
You know, they, you know, I have, let me get you, first question from Barrett, no relation, no relative. He says, what influences you to begin writing a piece or a work?
Oh,
anybody
question.
Jump in.
Okay.
Go ahead, Robin.
Go ahead. Okay. I like to write. It gets stuck in my head, and I've got to get it out. So I also have deadlines, so that's also an influence. But I'm happiest writing. So I guess I don't really think about starting. I just do. There. Done. Go, Dawn.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, that's good. Dawn, what do you think?
Well, most of the time, I'll actually just start out with a scene in my head. For whatever reason, anything can trigger it, and when I get that scene, I can't let it go. So I'll start to write it, and then I can set it aside after I've written that scene until I need it for my deadlines and things. But usually it's just it'll just come together at one point, and that's how my books will start.
Dawn, do you pants or do you flat?
Oh, I do both, actually. I will have, like, a basic roadmap. I know that I need to do, like, three major points to get from the beginning to the end, and then the rest of it I just kind of wing it. So sometimes I'll write myself into a really nice corner, but as I go along, it's like, well, the road trip, let's take the scenic route. So yeah, just kind of both. What about you?
I can't within an inch of my life because I get bored really, really easy. I know their names. I kind of know what's going to happen, and then the rest is a surprise. And I've tried the plot, and it's a freaking disaster. All right.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah?
I'm the same way. When I get an idea typically for a character, and it's usually just one of the two. I get an idea for the character, and then I sit down, and I'm like, okay, who would be the perfect match for this person? And just kind of, you know, figure out, get an idea for an opening scene with those two characters, and then I just run with it. But yeah, I'm definitely a complete pansier. I can't plot to save my life. I've tried, and
I'll sit down and waste the time, and it doesn't work.
I
can't write more than one book at a time. My girlfriend who plots can go from one book to the other. I get fixated on one book, one set of characters, and then I have to go full steam. And I'm actually jealous of people who can do more than one at the same time. But I write fast, so it all works out fine.
No, I write slow, but I plot because I have columns I've got to write, so we're good.
And I'm technically writing two books at one time, but I don't go back and forth between the two. Like, I started the one, and then I got about 13 chapters into that, and I was like, you know, I really need to go back and write the other one because it's a prequel to the other, you know, the one I was writing, and I'm like, I really should probably write that one first.
Oh, good. You could totally screw yourself.
Right. So I was like, okay, I'm going to stop this and go write the other one, and then I'll go back to that one.
Oh my God!
No, I don't know if you can do that too at the same time.
I have a question for you from Anita.
Anita asks, "Are you ever going to write a non-erotic novel?"
Yes, actually, I've written several non-erotic novels, but they're not quite as popular as my erotic ones. So, yes.
Well, okay.
Urban fantasy.
I love when you get these people sending you messages immediately. It's like, yes, I want to know now. I'm like, I'm only one, man. Come on.
You know, I try to, I don't know, for a while I thought that I had a lot more action and adventure than romance in my books. And I just kept always veering toward romance. I just didn't see the point, you know, if you're going out into outer space and all this different stuff, if you don't have romance with it, kind of what's the point? So it's kind of weird that I get those questions a lot, mostly because of the action adventure stuff. But I really do love hot sex in my books, so it kind of works out.
Well, Sherry, let me ask you a question. You have a book called Slave. Has anybody confused the fictionally, if I can say it three times fast, that'll be good, the fictional you for the real you?
Oh, yeah, a lot. I get the questions a lot about, you know, the BDSM lifestyle and stuff like this. I was just at a conference recently, and the person, these two ladies approached me, and they're in a polytriad relationship, and which basically means there's three of them that are in a relationship, and you know, they have BDSM elements involved in that. And the lady, she makes a comment. She's like, yeah, people like us. And I was like, referring to me and them and, you know, the whole in general. And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not saying yay or nay, but that's a huge assumption that just because I write something, you know, that I, you know, obviously am a part of it, because you don't, I think it's interesting that a lot of people feel that way about erotic and BDSM because they don't, that doesn't translate into the mystery horror genre. You never get somebody that if an author writes horror, you never, nobody ever asks Stephen King, do you go and, chop people up to figure out how it works?
I asked him that once, and the look on his face was not pretty. It was not pretty. But I was also in front of his audio publisher, Jim Brannigan, at the time when I asked him. And the look was like, you're kidding me, aren't you? Yes.
But the thing is you, I'm assuming you probably were kidding. It was just, it was kind of one of those off-the-wall questions to either kind of get a reaction or, something just interesting. But people are very serious. I don't know if, Don, and I don't know if you get this or not with your erotic stuff, but people assume that you, as far as they assume that you do very hands-on research.
Yes. I always get the question about the research, and that always makes me laugh. Because, there's always other stuff that goes on, never had sex with a werewolf, so why don't you ask me about that? I've never stabbed somebody, but lots of that happens in a lot of my action scenes, so why aren't you asking me about this? You always ask me about the sex side.
Or you could actually tell them that you write fiction and then see what they do.
Yeah, I had an interview with Fox News out in Las Vegas this past year, and the girl actually asked me how I research my sex scenes.
And your answer was, you got me hanging on my seat here.
Well, my answer was pretty much, I'm 36 years old, I'm married, I do know what sex is, thanks. What else do you want me to say? But anyway, you get some interesting questions.
To me, it's all research, but it's like I just wrote a proposal, and I don't know if you guys have ever been rejected like this. The publisher comes up to me and gets me on the phone and says, Pomerantz, this is unlike anything I've ever read of yours. Who really wrote it? I'm like,
oh,
I
my
did.
Gosh.
That would make me very angry. That upsets me a lot.
Well, I mentioned it in this month's Night Owl, and I may be self-publishing my new series, The Men of Mice.
Yeah.
Think Man from Uncle,
great.
Men of Mice.
Wow.
Okay.
The publisher wanted a spy spoof, and. And basically, I gave him an outline and ideas for it and everything else, and he decided to pass. So I may be taking it somewhere else. But that's beside the point. Yes, I do write other things other than just doing a radio show, I promise. I love when somebody says, oh, you're the guy on the radio, or you're the guy that writes that column, and you're not a writer. I'm like, excuse you? So have you guys ever had that situation?
Yes.
I have a lot of people who are shocked that I write erotic, because I was told years ago when I had a little stint where I was actually trying to get into the music industry, and I had a music executive actually tell me that they loved my voice, but they didn't think that I was very marketable because I looked too motherly. Now I write erotic romance.
Right. I get the teacher thing. You look like a teacher. You look like you write kids' books rather than erotic romance.
Exactly.
I've run into something different where it's just a romance writing isn't real writing. I told Bennett this on our last interview. I was at the White House Correspondents' Center last year, and it's all reporters, Bennett. And people would say, oh, so what do you do? And I would say, I write. And they'd say, well, what do you write? And I would say, I write romance. And they would, I may as well have said, I pick up poop off the ground and I eat it.
Yep.
And then,
wow.
But the irony was how many hard-ass, oh, butt, hiney, sorry, reporters pulled me aside later to say, you know, what, talk to me about this. Talk to me about this fiction romance, right? Because it's, the irony is romance is the highest selling genre that there is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the disrespect it gets is interesting. Amazing. Interesting, because I'm proud of what I write. I mean,
well, it's
a
fictional stepchild, okay? It, you know, there's fiction and then there's the romance. So it's the fictional stepchild. It's got to be the stepchild. I don't know why, but it has to be. And
people
treat
it
like a fictional
stepchild.
Yeah, well, now that everybody has Kindles, too, they can read whatever they want because nobody sees the covers. But I did an interview with USA Today just this week, and they were asking me, do I feel that romance gets a bad rap? And I was like, ooh. And the answer is, yeah, sure. But I also like things that I like comedies. I like big, splashy Broadway musicals. I like, you know, peanut butter parfaits, and I love what I write. Do I want to write the great American novel? Could I? No. I have no desire to. I like humor. I like romance. I like it.
Yeah, my big, I love writing relationships. I mean, relationships have always fascinated me, which is why I'm sure I got drawn to romance with reading it and writing it. I love that. I love relationships between people, and it's not just, you know, romantic relationships. I write a lot of family dynamics in my stories as well. One of the things people really commented about with my Daniels Brothers series is there's at least one scene in each book with the family. And especially in Red Zone, the second book in the series is this big, they all go home for Thanksgiving, and there's several chapters about Thanksgiving. And I get reviews all the time that comment specifically on Thanksgiving, on them going home to Thanksgiving and how they loved all that interaction. And that's just, I love that. I love that. I love that relationship aspect, whether it's between brothers, sisters, children and parents, whether it's dysfunctional or not.
Well, you know what? I think good writing is good writing, no matter what the genre is. And there you go. There's great in all different genres, and there's stinky in all different genres, but good writing is good writing.
I agree.
Exactly.
Give me trash anytime. I'll take the good stuff and the trash. I mean, I'm sorry. I will read a trash novel, and I'm not saying any of my guests write trash novels, but I used to read pulp fictions and Egrosi magazine and
so
those kind of things.
I love pulp fiction, so yeah.
And I'm not just talking the movie. I'm talking the good, dare I say it, I'm dating myself now, the shadow stories and Ellery Queen some of the cachets that have been out there for years. And some of them are trash, and some of them are excellent, and, you know, stuff you read in Ellery Queen Mystery Magazine were not always great, but still, some of them are magnificent.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I grew up on science fiction and horror pulp fiction, actually. So I had all kinds of stuff, and, you know, I grew up reading the Tales from the Crypt comics. And, you know, stuff like that. I absolutely love the stories. They're sometimes great, stories are sometimes terrible, but I loved it.
You mean Tales from the Crypt? Never mind. Shut up, Crippy. Oh, okay. Let me ask this. Oh, by the way, Robin, we have a question for you from Spencer. He says, I love Fashionably Dead. Have you ever thought of giving one of the characters from that book and combining it or entwining it with another author's books or the other author's characters?
Not that series. I have a new series coming out, and I'm doing an anthology with 12 other women in the fall called 12 Shades of Grey. And Dakota Cassidy's also doing that one. It's all paranormal. And she and I, this new series of mine is werewolves, and she and I are sharing, I've never done this before because I don't write with people normally, neither does she, but we're sharing a prologue together and with our characters, and we're going to write on from there, and they'll you know, spread apart. But I usually don't write with anybody, and I've got that particular series, Fashionably Dead, will probably end up being, I don't know, Fashionably Dead Down Under is out, Hell on Heels comes out in August. That's probably going to be about 8 books. But no, I wouldn't combine that series with anything else. But I am working with somebody, which is some brilliant buddy, who and that's going to be a challenge. We're laughing about it now. We're either going to kill each other or something's going to be really good.
Well, by the way, I do want to mention Robin, because I have talked about it once or twice. Robin is doing me a lovely favor in her Ready to Wear book. You want to tell about it, Robin?
I like to name my characters after my friends. It does not mean that my friends embody the anything of these characters, but it gives me great delight to name people after. And Bennett has shown up in Ready to Wear because he absolutely delighted me when we met each other, and that's what I do.
I can't wait to tell my the cousin who loves your work that it's like I'll gift her or get her a copy of the book or whatever and go, yeah, and she's gonna go, Bennett, that's you. I said, yeah. It's so
baby, hopefully. That comes out July 14th. That's in the Three Southern Beaches anthology with Kathleen Brooks and Christy Craig, and Ready to Wear is in that. So that's coming soon. That you will get that as a gift too, my love.
Thank you, darling. Let me ask you, all three of you ladies are great writers, and I know because I've read all three of your works. I'm prejudiced, can't you tell? Francine asked, how do you cure writer's block if you ever get it?
I don't get it. If I get blocked, I know I went the wrong way, and I can't, so I just go another way. Mm-hmm. That's my answer.
Yeah. That's usually it. I mean, if I'm actually really blocked, it's usually because I'm taking the characters in the wrong direction. I mean, if things just aren't flowing well, I've been known to take walks, and I'm the crazy lady who's walking down the street talking to herself because I'm literally talking out my plot and my characters and their motivations and their backstories and everything and trying to figure out where the heck, you know, I want to go next. But it doesn't happen very often. It's usually if I'm blocked, it's because I'm not doing what I'm supposed to do.
Remind me, I will get you the tape recorder like I do and have the mic. And everybody thinks I'm on the phone, but it's connected down to a cassette tape recorder, and I'm talking my column while walking, and people are like, what? Who? Huh? And I'm like, I've got the earpiece with the mouthpiece, and I'm talking it. And it's like, and is my favorite word. People are like, yes, you're eyeing so much. But, you know, when you finally take the tape and start transcribing it, the ahs vanish for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always been that way though. So
I get writer's block a lot, and I don't know if it's because of the difference like with the plotting or not. I'm not really sure, but when I do, I have to get away from the computer or get away from the book for a while. I'll have to sit and watch something on television, go for a walk, read. Sometimes it's a burnout. And I'm not aware of it. You got to, refill the creative well kind of thing. And so I'll sit down and read something, or for some reason, water seems to help me a lot. So like a shower or going swimming or something will usually help me unravel whatever I've got myself stuck into. But that's usually mine.
I've heard several writers say that they've gotten their best plot ideas in the shower.
Yeah, I have a water notebook now.
Is it waterproof though?
I do. I was military until recently. I retired a couple years ago, and so I had a whole bunch of those waterproof notebooks and stuff. I just threw one of them in the shower and kept it close by just in case.
I need one of those. Good God, I didn't know that existed.
Yeah, I was curious. Yeah. That sounds like a pretty good idea to me.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Well,
I love them.
They have now waterproof tablets that you can write on. You know, writing not a notebook per se, but it's a waterproof computer tablet that you can handwrite stuff and it translates onto a disk or whatever, and you can work. You know, it's waterproof, and you could be in the shower and whatever.
I would totally drop it though.
I don't know how much it is, but I was reading about it. I'm like, yeah, that's a great gadget. We have a question from Mark here, and it's like, who is your? Let me try to read his question. Who in a novel, your novel, not anybody else's, would you like to play on the silver screen? Robin, he especially says for you, Pirate Dave. Who do you want to play Pirate Dave on the silver screen?
Oh my God. Well, he clearly knows me or knows my life, and I've answered this question before, and the answer would be my husband,
Tell them who your husband is so they know, because I don't think most people know. I know who your husband is, and
a lot of my readers know. His name is Steve Zahn, and he's an actor, and he's hilarious, and he does read my stuff for the most part, but the one he liked the most was the profane romantic spoof I wrote kind of as a joke because my readers demanded it, that if that's the first thing people read of mine, God help you. But it's really, really wrong on every level. It's very funny. And if Pirate Dave were to come to the big screen, which I guarantee you it never will, it would be Steve. However, Steve and I have joked very seriously about doing a YouTube sock puppet video of Pirate Dave and his Randy adventures.
Oh, my gosh, I would love that.
Yep. Oh,
so
my
ladies,
God, you've read Pirate Dave. God. Okay.
Yes, we've all read Pirate Dave. Okay. And if you haven't, I think is it still free on Amazon?
Pirate Dave will be free always. Pirate Dave was a deal I made with my publisher because people demanded it, and I said, let me do this as a marketing tool because I will never charge anybody for Pirate Dave. And so Pirate Dave will be free till the end of time. So, yes.
Well, I will say this much, and I have gotten a lot of people. Mark, yes, you know who now will be cast. Ladies, Dawn, Sherry, who are your favorite novels and your characters you want to be played on the silver screen with?
I don't ever think that way. So I never really think about that kind of stuff, honestly. So I'm kind of on the, I'm going to have to
kind of
ask Sherry.
As far as, just in what book I think would translate best onto the silver screen would probably be my first novel, Hidden Threat, because it's got the romance, but it's got a lot of action and suspense to it. I've always thought that would probably be my easiest one to translate on screen. Character-wise, though, I'm kind of like Robin. I don't really think that way, but I know a lot of people have, for my Finding Anna series, have really been partial to the lead who plays in the TV show Arrow. Playing even Stephen Coleman in my Finding Anna series. So I think he's a little old, but, older than my character, because my character's only 25, but I get why they see, why they like him, because he's got, his demeanor really fits, so I'd probably be as close as I could go.
Okay. Oh, well. Bonita asks, do you guys have a favorite movie that you always come back to year after year, or whatever?
I do. I've got Ghosts of Mars and Push. Both of those are my candy movies. Whenever I'm done with a book, I'll actually sit down and watch those at the end. Oh.
I really do not have a whole lot of writing rituals. I don't. I tend to like romantic comedies. So I'll, when I need kind of that break or whatever, I'll go to the usually go to the library and search through all the videos and find a good romantic, you know, romantic comedy looks interesting to me, but there really isn't a go-to movie that I have.
I have a couple. It's like if I'm channel surfing and I land, it happens to be on, I stop. And one of them is Sense and Sensibility, and the other one is diametrically.
Which version of Sense and Sensibility? The Emma Thompson version
or the BBC version?
Okay.
No, I like the Emma Thompson version. I got to say, I think Alan Rickman is hot. And then diametrically opposite of that, I will stop for a movie called Happy Texas. And yes, I'm a little biased, but that movie makes me really happy. And then there's another movie, and it's Spinal Tap, Christopher Guest and Michael McKean and all
of
those
course.
Guys. Those are kind
of
movies that
gotta
just are comfort zone for me. Yep, goes to 11. 11.
Yes, 11, 11, 11, yes. And Nigel, that's what we say, Nigel, 11.
Nigel, yep, goes to 11.
Now, my favorite movie, just in case somebody wants to know, is Bond. James Bond.
Bond.
Goldfinger.
Yep. Which one? Okay, Goldfinger.
Wow.
Okay.
Give me Mr. Goldfinger, I'm not going to talk. Mr. Bond, I don't want you to talk. I want you to die. Yes, okay, I'm in. Yeah, that's my movie. I mean, don't get me wrong, Roger Moore was great in the Bonds he did, but no, I'm sorry, Connery. Sean Connery.
Yep. He's hot.
So
Even now, then
I go to the other spectrum when I need it is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the Gene Wilder version.
The Gene Wilder
version. Not the Johnny Depp version.
For me too, yeah.
Yeah.
So when I am in that kind of need to watch a good movie, that's the two I just go to.
When I'm flipping
doesn't
through the channel.
I only have 5,000 movies here. I'm staring at them right now. So... People think you're kidding, and somebody, a friend of mine, visited me at home and looked and said, "You do have 5,000 movies." I said, "Yeah." They're like, "You weren't kidding." I said, "No, I'm not kidding." So yeah, it's like yeah, pick a movie, any movie, yeah, okay. Here we go. I love this, Donatella. She's asking, has reading influenced your writing at all?
I don't think you can be a writer without being a reader.
I
read voraciously. It's always been one of my biggest pleasures in life. So if I'm not writing, I'm reading. So absolutely. And I read across the board. I read nonfiction, fiction, romance, sci-fi. It just depends on my mood, but I'm a voracious reader, and my opinion is that I don't think you can be a writer without being a reader.
I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. In fact, one of the downsides of being a writer is that I don't get to read as much as I used to. I used to devour, I'm a pretty slow reader, so I know there's readers that can devour books in 3 hours. My own readers tell me that.
Mine too.
It took me 6 months to write that book, and you read it in 3 hours. But I used to read probably 4 to 5 books a week, and now I'm lucky if I get through one every 2 weeks. But I do try to read at least a chapter a day, but sometimes that's even pushing it.
I don't
my writing schedule depending
genre.
On deadline.
Yeah, I don't read in the genre I'm writing in because I write contemporary and I write paranormal.
So what's on your coffee table right now that you're reading?
What did I just finish last night? Oh, I finished one of Kristen Ashley's books that I hadn't read, and I loved it because I'm writing paranormal right now. And so I was reading one of her rock chick books that I hadn't read, and it was a whole hell of a lot of fun.
I'm reading Wicked Games by Angela Knight. I just got it in the mail from her from a contest that she hosted, so I started reading it last night. So far, so good. I like her stuff.
Yeah, I do too.
Mm-hmm. I just started reading Waiting on You by Kristen Higgins. I just started it, so
yeah.
I can't tell you much about it. I've read the first chapter, so but so far so good.
Sheesh, you guys are pressing me. I'm reading Jerry Lewis's Dean in Me.
Actually, that was
awesome,
I
would love to read that. I love biographies.
I like biographies.
Remind me,
too,
give me the address. I'll mail you my copy when I'm done with it. It's not a Kindle. It's a hard book. It's in my hands.
Ooh.
It's physically in my hands. Oh, everybody said, is it on your Kindle? You can loan it to me. I said, no, it's a hardcover. And they're like, a hardcover? Yeah. Yes, I do read books that you can really feel. Oh, my God.
When I was in the military, whenever I would go on deployments, I would have to figure out what I wasn't going to take with me so I could pack more books. Because, you know, when you're out there in the desert, there's nothing to do, and you really want to read your books. So I was so excited whenever the Kindle came out, actually, because I could take my entire library with me. So
yeah.
I didn't have to worry about, you know, leaving essentials on the side because, you know, I wanted to read. But so I love both very much.
Well, I'm going through my movie star era because next thing is Roger Moore's My Word is My Bond. So I don't know what else I'm going to read soon, but it's like, yeah, somebody's like, are you reading movie star? But I'm just reading them. It's just fiction is the greatest thing to read. By the way, Sherry, you've got Ray in the chat room. It's in the eyes, she says. I don't know what that means.
It's in the eyes. Oh, she's talking about the actor for that I said that they like to play Stefan from in my Finding Anna series. She's saying it's the eyes that is the reason why all of my readers like him to play Stefan. So, yeah. I would guess
so let me do one thing, because I have a little homework I have to do. I think most of you know this route. I got to do my homework, because if I don't do my homework, people get mad at me, and I don't like them when they get mad at me. So on Monday, on The Legal Show, Attorney Sarah Steele and I will be discussing state regulations in California for porn stars. Yes, porn stars. And that is on the 23rd of June. On the 25th of June on Let's Talk, Huffington Post columnist Rachel Thompson and myself will be talking to Sean Fisher from the Yava Group. If I can say it three times fast, I'll be good. And she has a new book of poetry and prose that she's involved with, and we'll be discussing that. And on Friday, Trisha Dramet returns to Anything Goes, the half-hour show. So it'll be a lovely thing. And the week after that, the 30th through the 4th, on all shows, we're taking off. So we're just taking off for the 4th of July weekend, or 4th of July week. And we'll be back on the 7th of July with talking about Casey Kasem and the case of Casey Kasem and his children. So that'll be an interesting little discussion. First week in July in The Legal Show. See how easy that was? It's almost painless.
You got a great line of
those.
Those sound awesome,
sorry?
Actually.
Yeah, they actually sound really, really interesting shows, by the way.
Well, I try to get the shows I do are fun. But the shows I do also, I try to be informative. In the Night Owl column and other things, I teach, and I like teaching. I'd rather we all learn something than we all just sit there and go, yeah, I wonder what you do. No. I think we're all very intelligent people, and if we're discussing something, an issue that's important to me or something that sort of interests me, I think it's a fascinating issue to discuss.
Yeah.
And I usually get that, and Robin knows this, and Sherry knows this, and I think Dawn does as well. I want guests that have an opinion and are smart enough to be able to discuss it. Too many people don't discuss it. Too many people play games, and it doesn't come out right. And I enjoy having intelligent conversation, which is what this show is about, what the half-hour show is about, And so, you know, to me, I enjoy my guests. Is everybody, did everybody get enough booze?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes, definitely.
Just want to make sure. Just want to make sure I passed enough booze out.
You did, baby.
Oh, good. I'm just making sure. Okay. Sherry remembers this question. Long ago, I used to ask this question a lot on my old 90-minute shows. If you had dinner with five people, alive or dead, and they could have a meal with you, breakfast, lunch, dinner, didn't matter, who would it be and why? And you can select things like 1950s Elvis or 1970s Jerry Lewis or whoever.
Holy crap.
Oh, man.
No, Bennett,
yeah,
but you're close.
I remember this question. Oh, my word.
I know you did.
I'm trying to get, okay, I think I remember one of the people I said was George Washington. I just always found him to be absolutely fascinating, and some of his philosophies, especially on the presidency and things like that, and then, you know, just the experiences, you know, that he had. My grandfather, he died when I was 13, and he had Alzheimer's for the last 4 or 5 years that he was alive, so I was pretty young. The last time he was actually able to remember me and interact, so I didn't get to know him very well, and he was a pretty amazing man. Trying to think of who else I said that way back then. Ladies, you can pipe up any time now.
I've got four.
Go for it.
All right, here's my four. God, Dorothy Parker, Bob Fosse.
Wait. God played by George Burns or Morgan Freeman?
Actually, either. It's all good to me. It could be a woman. It could be whatever. God, Dorothy Parker, Bob Fosse, Patton. And then, it would be an artist. It's not like either. I really like Degas' paintings. I can't remember art history from college. I don't remember if he's a dork or an asshole or a really interesting guy, but I love his paintings. So there, Degas.
Ooh.
Awesome.
You know, it's really funny. I had asked this question of some students about 6 months ago, and I got the, so is Morgan Freeman God or is he just close?
He's God.
He's definitely
God.
The voice of God in my head. Wow.
Well, I'm sorry. I just saw George Burns doing "Oh God," and I can almost hear. The biggest mistake I made was, and I'm like, yeah, that's God.
I love George Burns.
Yeah. It'd be kind of delightful to get up there and realize that was true, but.
Right. Me, it would be my grandmother. My grandmother, she introduced me to reading. I mean, she was a voracious romance reader. And she passed away when I came back from one of my deployments from lung cancer. And so I would give anything to sit down with her again. And my brother, who also passed away when I was very young. I guess as far as scientists and historical figures go, I would really love to sit down with Einstein, because his philosophy next to the science was always interesting to me. How he would always have, these quotes on life and philosophy and love and all of these things. I'm sure he would be fascinating to talk with. So I would really like to sit down with him, if I could. And that's all I've got. I've only got three.
Yeah, I'd have to sit down and think. Last time you gave us a heads up when you gave me that, you gave us a heads up. You sent an email and said, I'm going to ask this question so we can actually think about it ahead of time. That was blindsided.
Well, I figured
you knew
this question. Darling, you knew this question from last time. I figured you'd remember.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that was like 2 years ago. Marie's not that good anymore.
Let me ask you, let's talk, and Sherry knows the subject very well. What do you think of critics?
I think that anybody can be a critic in the day of the Internet. I think that for most of my grown-up life, I was an actor. Now I'm a writer. I didn't, I don't usually read reviews, quite honest, and that's the truth. But I'm more interested in what my readers think, you know, if they're enjoying blah, blah, blah. But I think there are really good critics. I think educated in what they're talking about, but the word critic doesn't mean what it did before the internet to me.
Mm-mm.
So,
and why,
you know,
is that?
I can go on. Because with the internet, you're faceless and anybody can say whatever they want. Opinion is opinion, so you can't say someone's opinion is incorrect. But somebody who's well-versed in the subject to give a educated or diplomatic, like it's somebody who had no knowledge of ballet, for example, could go and critique a ballet. And to me, you know, what's the point?
Yeah.
But like I said, in this day and age, with social media being what it is, anybody can say anything they want. That's good. That's bad. Freedom of speech is absolutely important. But it's interesting. I don't know. So
it just means you have to take everything that you – every review that is out there, you have to take it with a grain of salt because you have no idea where that person is coming from their experience. I mean,
good and bad.
Yeah, I've gotten reviews who completely slammed my BDSM romance, and you can tell by the review that they don't read BDSM.
Right.
So why are you reviewing? Why did you read it?
That's why I'm saying anybody can be a reviewer because we've got all of the venues, the places where people buy our books. There's all sorts of, anybody, good and bad. It is what it is.
Yeah, I think in some ways it makes it easier for readers when they're perusing reviews, and in some ways I think it makes it harder. I mean, they get a wider variety of opinions, but like I said, you really have to take every review with a grain of salt, no matter if you're an author or a reader, because, you don't know what experience that person is, that reviewer is bringing to the table when reviewing that book. So you really have to look further than what they're saying and actually look at how they're saying it, how they're wording things, because that will usually give you a pretty good idea as to what their knowledge level of the subject is.
Let me throw my hat in before another person says anything. I want to let you guys know I'm a 30-year card-carrying member of being a reviewer. First an audio critic, then a book reviewer, then other things too. But I also wrote while doing all of that. So
your background substantiates the.
Right.
Yeah, okay, but I hate, and hate is such a strong word, but let me use hate. Goodreads, when somebody says, I read up to page 27, and I give it 2 stars because I didn't like where it was going to. I'm like, come on, that's not reviewing. I'm sorry. Somebody
right.
said,
no, you have
they
to
read up,
to,
it's a 300-page book, and they read up to page 27, does not, you shouldn't review it. Then don't put down a word. Don't say, hi, I read. No, you didn't read. You went to page 27, you finished it.
Yeah, and you quit.
And you quit.
Well, that I think is where Ben and I actually disagree a little bit. I think 27 is kind of thing. I usually will give a book up to 50 pages just because I figure that, unless it's just absolutely horrible. But I don't particularly mind reviews that will say, I only read up to this amount of pages, and I stopped because. That's fine with me. I don't mind that, but I hate the ones that will go on for, 5 paragraphs about how crappy the book was and how they didn't like this character and this and that and the other, but then you find out that they only read to 27 pages. I'm like, how much character development could actually happen in 27 pages?
Oh, well, I remember Rachel Thompson shared a good one with me, and I always remember this. This woman read her book, and she says, I read the first 2 sections, the first 2 chapters of your book, which is about 8 pages total. And I thought it was overly depressing, and I decided not to go on, and I only give it one star because I really don't want to be depressed anymore. I'm
well,
like, lady,
after
why didn't
really
you pick up
the
book?
Not depressed.
Well, obviously it didn't.
Yeah.
This is the way I feel about it is, you know, there's a lot of popular books and movies and stuff out there that people will say this is the best thing since sliced bread. Here, try this. You're going to love it. And I don't. For whatever reason, it doesn't resonate with me. So I accept that what resonates with one person isn't going to resonate with another. The only time I start really paying attention to negative reviews is when I start getting consistent ones about the same thing. Because then that's that's an issue on my part, something that I've done. But for the most part, when it comes to somebody being critical or you know, saying that they're a critic, saying that they're a reviewer, the truth is writing reviews, I think, is one of the hardest jobs out there because it's one of the ones that are that's impossible for me to do. It's almost impossible for me to review a book, and I don't know why, but I have a lot
of
respect for people to do that.
I don't review books. I would never leave a bad review anywhere. Yeah.
Oh, reviewing books is easy. You just give your opinion. But reviewing audio is harder, and spoken word recording is harder because is it capturing the text? You have to read the text to capture. Is it capture the text abridged or unabridged? Is the characters alive? If you have, say, Joe Montaigne, you're reading a Spencer novel, he could do Hawk like this and then do Spencer very calm and Susan a little more meeker. And you're listening to the vocal shadings that he has, and it's totally amazing. And Robin, you know, as an actress, you know what I'm talking about, vocal shadings, on how an actor or an actress can change their voice or their mannerism. And doing it without a picture, you know, you can hear the different characters coming alive to life. But, you know, and most people, when they think, oh, yeah, you review books for blind people. No, I review, they still have audiobook companies, and Audible is more popular than you'll ever know. And, I mean, you get people like Samuel Jackson, and I will say this word because this is the book title, And if you haven't heard it, you should. It's called Go the to Sleep. It's F.K. And it's 11 minutes, and it's read by Samuel Jackson, and it's not for public earfare. But if you want to really laugh, it's an adult children's book.
I like that.
Oh my gosh,
I didn't say the F word, but you know what the F word is.
Well, you told
for
me I couldn't
unlawful
say it on
carnal
air,
knowledge.
So
how's that
never
sound?
Done it. There. That's good.
There you go.
Thank you.
But we know
the F word, and it's read by Samuel Jackson, so it's like you can't miss. And it's only about 10, 11 minutes, and it's worth every penny. I mean, I've listened to this and just cannot it's like if I ever have a bad day, which I sometimes do, you put it in and you laugh. It is hysterically funny. And I think Audible has it for like $1 or $2 to keep. So buy it. It's well worth it. And it's Go to Sleep. But it's such a beautiful piece of work. Now, I would ask, have you ladies thought of having your books? I know I've asked Robin before, but since this is a new show, let me ask again. Have you thought of having your books put to audio?
Yeah, I'm a hybrid author, so I'm traditional and independent. So yeah, I've already listened to audition tapes and talked with the Audible people, and honestly, this is crazy, and they thought we were crazy, but they're really interested in it. I mean, I might do it. Steve and I might do one of my books together, but that might also just take up too much time. So both my kids are dyslexic, so Audible books have always been part of, they listen while they read. It's been an amazing tool. And I got to say, some of the books for younger kids, and my kids are 12 and 14 now, aren't great when I listen to them. And they're not great to my kids either. And oftentimes, I'll read aloud while they read. So I love audiobooks. I have a lot of them, and sometimes they don't do it for me. Because it's the same way a movie doesn't sometimes do it for me. If the book was really good, what's in my mind or how their voices sound, they didn't hit it, so it doesn't feel as good to me. So audio is tricky, but, yeah, I'm going to do it with my books.
Okay, which one are you going to start with?
Right now.
Fashionably Dead.
The first one?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, sorry.
My first three of my Finding Anna books are on Audible. So they are on audiobooks. And I'm actually trying to...
Well, wait, do you like it? Do you like your productions on Audible, or they just don't sound...
Yeah, they do. I mean, I like them, but I'll be honest, I can't listen to them because I can hear the sound. They characters will start talking in my head, and it's weird for me, but I know that some people really like audiobooks, and I have fans that are huge fans of the audiobook versions. I'm not a huge audiobook fan myself. Like, I rarely listen to books on audio because I just prefer to read the books and be able to hear the characters in my head versus have somebody read it to me.
I agree with that.
But I have tons of people. I mean, I have a lot of readers who are like, they love the audio version of the book. But that being said, I'll give a little plug here if you don't mind.
Plug away.
As I said, the first three books of my Finding Anna series are on Audible. My publisher, there's four books in the series. My publisher decided against producing the fourth book on Audible because the book is like 140,000+ words long, and in order to actually get the production done, because the other books have two actors doing the reading, it's going to cost upwards of $12,000 to produce it. So they chose not to do it. So I have a site set up on GoFundMe to try to raise some money to produce.
Well,
it
I would suggest you go and give it to Brilliance Audio, which does Unabridged. They just did Herman Wolk's Winds of War and War of Remembrance, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And those are not 5 or 10 minute books. You know, those are, never mind.
Right.
You know how thick they are. Yeah. I'm not talking a maxi series, but you know they're not little books either. And I think Random House is going to hopefully do Gone with the Wind, the unabridged version. Da, la, la, la. Okay.
Yeah. Well, if anyone's interested in helping fund my audiobook. Like I said, it's on GoFundMe. You can just go to GoFundMe.com/FindingAnna. And that
is that a Kickstarter
site,
you're doing?
Kind of, yeah. It's a Kickstarter program, yeah. It is the only way, because let's be honest, I mean, I don't know many authors out there that have $12,000 just sitting in the bank that they shell out for an audiobook. And with this particular situation, because it's the fourth book in a series, I really don't want to go to a different production company to have it done, because I wouldn't be able to use the same actors, which would mean different voices. They've kind of got me, I mean, I'm kind of over a barrel in that respect, and in order to do that, like I said, I've seen the invoice, the estimate from the production company, and it is $12,000+. So
yeah, but will they get
yeah.
to the same voices to do it? You know,
yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's
because
that's,
you know they could
the
change,
voices,
they could switch
yeah.
a non-narrator if they felt like it. You know.
Yeah, so I mean, my understanding is that estimate is for the using the same actors. So I'm hoping to go, but again, the longer it takes for me to raise the funds, the less likely that's probably going to happen, because, you know, things can happen and actors can leave the companies, and yeah, so much fun that way. But audiobooks are a whole other challenge. I mean, it's a completely different different thing to work with. And I, like I said, I remember when I had to listen to the voices and find, you know, find the actors that I thought would be good fits. And I will say that it was a lot easier finding the female voice than it was the male voice. A lot easier.
So, Dawn, are you going to have any of yours brought to audio?
Yes, actually. We're working on, I have a co-written book with Zitter Kellen that's currently with Lucid. And we are shopping around the book for audio right now. Eventually, I'd like for my Silver Sun Devil series to have audio. But it's a little different whenever you're when you're talking about a series of books, usually they want you to wait until you have a certain word limit before you pitch it. So I'm just going to have the complete series and then pitch it as one whole thing so that they can do separate audiobooks with the same actor so I don't lose them.
Robin, I will tell you one thing. I want Pirate Dave on audio. I want Steve to record it, and I want Steve Zahn to record Pirate Dave. You can tell him that if you want.
I will tell him that. He's actually out with the kids right now, but I will tell him that when he comes home tonight.
But I would love to hear him do that. I'm not trying to be rude. I don't know if he's done an audio spoken word recording or not, but
he's done a lot of war ones. He does a lot of voiceover.
Well, I would love him to do Pirate Dave. I mean,
it's high quality literature, Pirate Dave. So
yeah, I know. Yeah. at least you know I'm serious when I say this. You know, I'm dancer. As an audio critic, I'm like, yeah. Do you know, ever since you did my previous, the half hour Anything Goes, I have gotten more emails like, when is she doing an audio? I don't know. I can't answer that. You know, it's like, yeah. I mean, I had, and I will tell you this much, you know, since Dakota Cassidy, and I love Dakota, just had one through Tandor Media, she says, is the other, Renee George, and yourself doing audios with Tandor. I said, call Tandor. Don't ask me. I don't handle Tandor business. But it's like they want, is she doing it? I said, I don't know. Talk to Tandor. Don't talk to me. Because these people want to know, and they think I know. You know, that I'm going to pull the string and then suddenly, you know, it's like suddenly it'll become an audio. You know, I'm not that lucky. I'm sorry. I only review the things.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, or you know, it's like you guest on the radio show and suddenly it's like, oh, your friend. Yeah, okay, yeah, sure, yeah, I'm friends, yeah.
I did name a character.
Well, it was really funny. I say that I live in Maryland, but I say I live in the D.C. area. And somebody at a book convention went up to me and says, do you know Barack and Michelle? I said, sure.
Yes.
I go to the White House and borrow carrots from the garden.
Well, that was a jump.
I'm sorry?
I said, that was a huge leap. That you live in the D.C. area, and then you say so you automatically.
Well, they think that, you know, because I know you or I talk to Robin or whatever, and we're friends online.
Mm-hmm.
They think that suddenly, oh yeah, you can pull the string and it'll happen, or you can ask them to do something and they'll do it because I'm local or because we're friends or whatever. They don't think of that at all. And that's why I made that leap. I love being popular, don't get me wrong, but it's like suddenly folks, I've got power, but not that much power. So, let's start with Dawn. What are you working on now, and what's coming up for you?
Right now I'm working on Devil's Do, which is the second Silver Tongue Devil's book. It was a book, Silver Tongue Devils was a book in the Tall, Dark, and Alpha box set. And it was about equal action adventure, sci-fi, and romance. And I didn't expect to ever continue the series, but it became so popular and readers kept demanding more that I'm actually writing the series for the fans so that they can see the entire story that I had in my head. So it's really exciting for me because this is my first trek out into self-publishing on my, you know, all the way. So I'm pretty excited about the series just because of fan love and stuff. So,
Sherry, other than your crossing book, what else you got coming up?
I'm currently writing the prequel in the first book for my first self-published series. That will be called, the series will be called Serpent's Kiss. It's a BDSM erotic romance series. I'm hoping to have the prequel out in December, and the first full book in the series out the first part of next year.
Okay. And I know, Robin, you just had a wrap party, and it's still going on, by the way, it's on Facebook. I'm looking at it now. You've got,
yeah,
it's still going on Facebook, and they're partying galore. I mean, yeah, they're drunk and everything else.
Uh-huh.
For your new book, Cop a Feel.
Right. That's
what else do you have? I'm sorry?
Yeah, that's the third in the Handcuffs and Happily Ever After series. That came out the 19th, and I have Three Southern Beaches, an anthology, like I said, with Kathleen Brooks and Christy Craig, comes out July 14th. I'm currently finishing Hell on Heels, which is the third in the Hot Damned series, comes after Fashionably Dead Down Under, and that comes out in August. And then the anthology I'm doing with amazing freaking authors, Dorinda Jones, Liliana Hart, Dakota's doing it, Robin Perini, a whole bunch of people, that comes out in October. And my story is called The Switching Hour. It's about witches. So that's what I got.
And Ready to Wear is coming out when?
Ready to Wear is in the Three Southern Beaches anthology, and that's July 14th.
That's July 14th. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And that'll be the, once that separates out of the anthology, it'll be out by itself, and then it's part of that new series that I'm writing.
Okay.
So there you go.
You're busier than a bumblebee, sweetheart. You're busier than a bumblebee.
Yeah, I write fast, so.
So let me ask you, other than yourself, and I love all your works, by the way.
Thank you.
Who's your favorite authors?
My favorite authors are, I'm obsessed with paranormal. I love Dorinda Jones. I love Thea Harrison, Janine Frost, Dakota Cassidy, Chloe Neal. God, there's so freaking many, and I'm going to forget a bunch. I like Kelly Armstrong. That's a good start.
Yeah.
I'll take the good start. I'm sorry?
Yeah, Chloe Neal, definitely. Dakota Cassidy, definitely. I recently started reading Robin stuff. Dakota was the one who actually turned me on to your books, Robin. So I love paranormal comedy. Michelle Bardsley. Renee
I love
George.
Michelle too. Yep.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Kim Knox, I love her stuff. Lexi Cooper writes amazingly hot Australian men. I really love to read. Madeline Price has probably the best voice, I think, in dark paranormal erotic romance right now. I love her. Anne McCaffrey is my go-to for science fiction, always. I love her. And, of course, Heinlein. I still read Heinlein as often as I can, and Piers Anthony, and I go back to my old classics a lot, so.
I guess it's my turn.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
You think so? My go-to author is probably Diana Gabaldon's Outlander series. I've reread that story more times than I care to count. And then if I'm looking for something a little on the sweet side, I tend to go for either Sydney Logan or Lissa Bryan. who I was there with my publisher, and I just kind of picked up their books, and I was like, oh, I like them, and then I, like, picked up their other books. So, but again, they're more on the sweet side. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with erotic romance because I like it, but I like my style of it, I guess. And then I also like Jennifer Probst. I liked her her Marriage to a Billionaire series. I really like that. And then Erin Nicholas, she's got some good books out there too, which are more along the erotic line if I'm looking for something a little hotter.
Sheesh, and I wasn't going to say anything until I get this nice Yahoo IM from Janice saying, what's yours, Bennett? I was going to not say anything. Okay, what are mine? I like Roald Dahl. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, The Witches, James the Giant Peach, yes, I'm prejudiced. Norman Juster's The Phantom Tollbooth. Ray Bradbury, Something Wicked This Way Comes, and of course, The Martian Chronicles. Thank you, Jerry Roberts, for revitalizing that for me. Thank you. And also, dare I say it, Mr. Lucky, written by Blake Edwards, and the novel before the TV series, yes. And then, of course, John Jakes, North and South. Yeah, I don't always stick in one genre. And I don't want to even go into Shogun and the rest of the Clavels that I love. Yes, the ones that look like doorstops. Yes, I read those. Yes. Taipan, Noble House, Shogun. Yeah, oh, yeah, those are on. Yeah, King Rat. Yeah, people are like, you read those? Yeah, I've read them. I don't read them every 5 minutes, but, yeah, it's like, yeah, they're my favorite stuff. I love when people are like, they look at the size of the book, and they're like, you've read that book? Yeah.
My library is like that.
People do that with Outlander, too. They're like, what? How big is it? Yeah. I think the biggest one is like about 1,000 pages. I'm like, yeah, I've read it several times, in fact.
Well, and this is people have heard this story enough times. When I was 9, I listened to Orson Welles doing the radio version of Les Miserables, and my dad said, you should really read the book. So at that time, this was a couple of years ago, Les Mis was a thick book. Yes, it was about 1,500 pages, and it was a hardcover. And so I'm carrying this book around. I spent like 9 months reading it, and a small dictionary and the book. And adults would go to me and say, is that your mommy and daddy's book? I said, no, it's mine. And then they suddenly just clammed up because they didn't know what to do right then.
Yeah. They're uncomfortable with you all of a sudden. I get a lot of that with the reading thing that I used to do when I was a kid, too. My family's not really big readers. So it was like that a lot growing up, where my cousins and everybody were like, what are you doing? I'm reading. That's, you know, what I'm doing. It's reading. And then they would just completely not know what to do with me.
Yeah, they don't know what to say. They don't know how to react. I have the same thing. My family is not. There's one aunt in my family that's a big reader, and that's it. Like, the whole rest of my family is not. And, yeah, they're like, oh, you're reading a book. Okay.
Yeah. Is that the reaction usually? You know, you're reading a book.
Yeah. Big shock. I know.
Yeah.
It's a big thing. Let's throw a party. Yeah, it's like that in my family, too. So.
All right, then I come from weirdos because, actually, my mom, my dad, that's why I read. Everybody wrote, too. Everybody wrote, everybody read. So that was just luck. Luck, and we've done the same thing with our kids. I mean, books aren't toys to me. I'll buy them a book any day of the week. Books and craft supplies are not toys, so I'm always a sucker for that for my kids.
Same here, yeah. In my house, it's the same way. My grandmother was the reader, so she would send me all of her books when she was done, and we would always exchange and stuff like that. So with my kids, it's been, you know, about any time you want a book, you let me know, we'll get a book, whatever it is you want.
Same way.
I wish it was like that. I used to get weird, you know, my mom and dad, they didn't understand why I wouldn't wanted to go to the library and get, like, check out, like, 20 books, like the maximum limit, because we lived, like, 20 minutes away from the nearest library growing up, so we didn't go very often. So every time I got a chance to go, it's like, I mean, I checked out the maximum that they would allow us to check out under the library card, which for children's books I think was like 20 books. So I would come home with this huge stack of books that would keep me busy for about a month.
Well, I remember visiting my aunt, and I went through my Ed McBain phase. And I went through all the Ed McBain books she had, the 87th Precinct. I was into mysteries. And I went through all of them and then took a list of what they had in one of the books and went to the library and saw them and went to the library. And the librarian says, I'm sorry, these are adult books. You can't go. And you can't get these. And I was staying with my aunt for the summer. My aunt said, come back. And she says, why can't you check this out? Well, they're for adults. He says, yeah, well, so is the news, but I let him watch that, too.
Nice.
And I read all those Ed McBain books. She, and the librarian says, did you really read them? I said, yes, and I started to tell her about it. And she sort of like, oh, okay. So people, you know, don't think these days. Nowadays, if a kid wants to buy a Stephen King book, oh, sure, no problem. Then it was like, they don't want you to do that.
Well, I have to be really careful because I write erotic romance. I won't friend people on Facebook. I get friend requests all the time from, like, the daughters of my readers and stuff because their mom will talk about a book that they read of mine or something. And I have to tell them, you're underage. So because what I write is adult content, I can't have you on the – I'm sorry. So, you know, everything for me has to be, you know, 18 and over with all of my audience and stuff. So, So hopefully people are not allowing kids to buy my books, I'm hoping.
I've run into signings this year because I have cartoony covers and my books are adult.
Right.
And I've had moms with their teenage daughters come up. I'm like, oh, no. Nope, these are grown-up books.
I had a lady last year. I had a young question to call her lady. A young girl came up to my table at a book signing, and she was looking at Slave. And I kept looking at her, and I was like, "How old are you?" She was 14.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Well, see, that's the parent. The parents need that's.
I told her mom ended up coming die, and I said, well, obviously it's your decision whether you purchase this book for her. I said, but it is an adult book. This is not, it's not written for a 14-year-old. I said, this has got adult content on it, and I consider it an 18 and up book because it's got a lot of heavy content in it. And, you know, it didn't end up coming back around, which is fine, but whether or not she ended up reading, because she has read a certain other popular book that made the rounds in the more erotic thing.
Right.
So,
the
14-year-old
had?
Wow,
I'm not surprised.
Yes.
My son,
it was like, I wouldn't have sold it to her. I mean, her mom was right there. If she would have said, yeah, she can have it, then, what am I going to say? But, you know, it's like I wouldn't have just sold it to her straight off if my parents wouldn't have been right there. So,
yeah, no. Uh-uh.
Know what you're getting.
Absolutely not. My son's 15, and he says that a lot of the girls in his high school, I've read that series that will not be named. It's definitely making the round in his high school, too, which is really creepy. But, of course, he asks me questions. And I'm like, let's talk about, like, real life versus fiction, because you got to remember that this is all fiction. That's the big thing, you know, with perception, I think, with children, is that they don't quite make that past, you know, until they're an adult, they don't quite make that connection between what's in fiction versus real life. They don't have the experience to back it up yet. And so they step out into dangerous territory, and there's a lot of crazy stuff going on related to that dangerous territory right now. So,
well, let me change the subject for a second here. That way we can get this getting a little heavier than I usually have it. But let me change the subject here. What's the weirdest fan encounter you ever had?
Oh, man.
I have a lady in South Africa who thinks that a character of mine named Shoshana LaHump is real. And she writes on a fairly regular basis to find out how Shoshana's doing, what kind of stuff she likes to do, what she likes to eat. And my weirdest. And God love her, and I'm glad she lives in South Africa.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Yeah. I did finally say at one point that it's fiction. She's not really real, but she didn't listen.
So are you killing that character off of the next book?
No, that actually, Papafeel is the, it was three books. So that series is actually done now. So there you go. But she didn't die. I love her.
Mine was actually kind of in the dangerous territory. I had a stalker last year. That got really bad for a little while. Following me to all my social media places and harassing me and stuff because I wasn't acting the way he thought. I suppose it was a he. He thought I was supposed to.
It ain't me, I promise. It ain't
the way
me.
I was writing. Well, I had to report him to the FBI, actually, because of stalker laws. So it was definitely not good stuff. For a while, it was pretty scary. And the guy was in the United States, so that's my worst. Hopefully that'll be my worst forever fan encounter, I guess.
Not
your weirdest, not your worst.
Yeah.
Okay.
My worst, yeah. My weirdest was somebody who thought that we were soulmates. Because she read one of my books and she thought that we were in the same head space, and she started sending me all of her past life stuff, and that was interesting.
Ms. Sherry?
I would say my weirdest was probably I got an email from a fan who'd read my Finding Anna series, and it was a male. He absolutely loved it. He was going on and on about, you know, the story. And I thought the first email was a little over the top. But, you know, it wasn't anything really overly weird. But, you know, I normally respond to my fans. So I sent him a email back, you know, thanking him, you know, for being on glad he liked it, blah, 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 blah. And he sends me back this huge response. I mean, it would have probably been about 2 pages written down, going on about, like, he actually dissected the story and was, like, going on about how I could have done this way, or it would have been nice if this would have happened, or I should do this in the next book. I mean,
was he a wannabe critic, or just was half nuts?
I don't know, but it was the way it kind of laid out. I went to my beta reader, and I like showed it to her. I was like, is it just me, or is this weird?
No, it's definitely
Yeah, and so I just chose kind of not to respond to him anymore because I was just like, okay, this is just not normal. You can go and say, oh, yeah, I wish that this would have happened to this character, but to actually dissect the whole entire series like that, and some of the stuff that, like, he was saying, it's almost like you were talking about the blurred line between reality, that these were real characters versus fiction. Just some of the stuff that the comments he said was kind of like, I don't know if you completely understand that these people are in my head. I didn't want to end up with a stalker issue, so I was like, okay, I'm just cutting communication.
Well, my weirdest encounter, the recent weirdest encounter, I was at a Target on Memorial Day, and I was buying a microwave. My microwave had died, and I was buying a new one. And this person's in the back of the line, looks at me and gives me this look, and then points fingers, says, "I know you." I said, "Okay, you're famous." I said, "Okay, you're Bennett Pomerantz from Blog Talk Radio." I'm like, "Okay, what are you doing here?"
Shopping.
And I said, "Buying a microwave." I mean, what did she think? I have a servant? You know, hi, you know, Ahmed, come on, Ahmed, please buy my microwave. No, I'm in a t-shirt and jeans. And you know, if you look at some of the pictures on Blog Talk, I wear a suit or I wear a jacket, and I look, you know, I'm in t-shirt and jeans. I'm getting comfortable. Oh, you know, it's like you're not dressed right. Like, I, no offense, I'm right now in my poppin' fresh yoga pants and a long sleeve shirt. You know, it's like I don't dress perfect, but it was like, you know, I was like, I almost wanted to tell the clerk, please hurry up. Because I love my fans, and like, you know, it's great. And then she said, Sarah Steele, who's redhead, and Rachel Thompson, who's redhead. She says, "How can you tell them apart? Same fan."
Wow.
And I said, "Well, Rachel is more literary, and Sarah's more legal. Sarah's an attorney, so yes, she's more legal."
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "Oh, okay," you know. The line is inching up. Finally, we get there, and it's like, "You have a good day. I'll hear you on the radio." And if she does, that's great. "If you're listening, ma'am, thank you very much for supporting the show and everything else." Okay. Now that I've said that lovely story, and because that way I don't have to have Jack give me hell because he asked to make sure I would tell my experience. We're good on that. I want your link. I want everybody's links, sphinxes, and jinxes, so that way they know how to get a hold of you other than Tano sending smoke signals. Let me start with you, Dawn. How do they get a hold of you, and how do they contact you, and anything else, your websites, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Sure. You can go to my website at dawnmontgomery.com. And you can sign up for my newsletter so you can keep up to date on everything that's going on. If you'd like to hit my Facebook page, it's facebook.com/author Dawn Montgomery. And,
wait a second. Don't hit
all
it.
The time.
Just gently tap it. Don't hit it. You'll break your computer.
No punching. Those are the easiest ways to get in touch with me and to find me. And I talk to all my fans, so everybody is welcome to chat with me as they need to. So,
Sherry, how do they get a hold of you? I should know this. Go ahead.
Yes. The best way is to visit my website, which is SherryHayesAuthor.com. There's a link to my Facebook page, my Google Plus page, my Goodreads, pretty much all my social media, and you can also sign up for my newsletter. Like Dawn said, that way you make sure you don't miss any new releases or anything. And I do also have a book club group on Facebook. If you click on my Facebook, my author page, and just shoot me a message, I will link you directly to the Goodreads group or the group on Facebook. But it's kind of a more casual place to kind of just for readers just to chat about my books and just life in general and hang out. Kind of go from there.
Okay, Robin, before I get it, I have Charlie. She's a female. She said, "I enjoyed the event today on Facebook,"
mm-hmm.
for Copperfield. And she said, mm-hmm. "Since it's your birthday tomorrow, you have any special plans?" That's not my question. That's Charlie. That's with an I, not an E-I-E.
Well, thanks, Charlie. I'm happy you enjoyed the thing today. I am going to sleep in tomorrow because I'm exhausted. And then my husband is doing everything. He's going to make dinner, and then one of my best girlfriends, who's an amazing baker, is making my birthday cake, which she says is going to be very funny, and we're just having a few people over. So that's what I'm doing. And the way to get a hold of me, the easiest way is robinpeterman.com, and that's got all my links to everything. I'm extremely active on Facebook. I have a couple of groups that if you dig what I do, you're more than welcome to join. That's all. You can find it all on my author page. I do Pinterest, Twitter, all that kind of stuff. You can find it all at robinpeterman.com.
Oh, God, you're easy.
I am.
You're easy, woman. You're easy. No, all kidding aside. No, because I want to make sure that Charlie got a thank you. Yes, Charlie's saying thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Enjoy everything. I'm reading this directly from Yahoo Messenger. Thank her, thank her, thank her. It was a great event. She should do more of them.
Oh, my God, no.
Hey, Charlie, she hears you. I'm not
I know. I run those suckers with military precision, and they take me at least a week to get, because I write everybody's intro. I mean, and I'm there. I was there from 10 o'clock this morning till 8 o'clock tonight.
Well, the next time you'll do one, we'll end it with a show like this, so that way it's sort of like part of the party.
Well, dude, when you contacted me again, I was like, holy God almighty, I've scheduled all this in the same day. But actually, I'm still awake and I'm fine. I do need to eat at some point, but I'll do that.
Yeah, well, we're going to be over in about 5 minutes.
I'll eat then.
You'll eat, I promise. I'll even bring the a la carte tray over. I'll even bring the a la carte tray. I won't feed you. That's Steve's job. That's not mine. But I'll bring the a la carte tray over. Well, you want chicken or do you want fish?
I want fish, but go ahead.
Oh, good. Thank you. Gefilte or do you want whiting?
Whiting, baby.
Okay. I wanted to thank you, Robin, for coming, and thank you for a lovely event today. It was beautiful on Facebook.
Aww,
and
you
guys should get her book, Cop Feel. I'm not saying it could, but she had a great blog party, or whatever you want to call it, on Facebook today. It was great. And I thank her for coming. Sherry Hayes, I love you. You know that.
Thank you. Well, thanks
for
having me.
I'm sorry?
I said I know it was last minute, but thank you for having me. It was fun.
It's always. And Dawn, it's been a pleasure. We're going to do this again sometime, right?
Of course. I'd love to be back. Thank you for having me.
I'm sorry? There we are. Okay. I thank you all for coming. Thank you for my party. And all of you, I wish you well. And we'll be back. I will be back doing another Anything Goes. That will be on the 12th of July, when we'll have four guests again discussing what's going on and having a good time. Good night, and have a pleasant tomorrow.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Bye.